Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is December 21st, 2021, and I'm your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is At the Coca, Coca for Ocas. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Spencer Greaves. He is an emergency medicine resident at Florida Atlantic University. He received his bachelor's in biomedical engineering from Marquette University and his master's in public health from Dartmouth College. Spencer completed his medical doctorate at the Medical College of Wisconsin. He and his wife live in Baton Beach, Florida, where they recently celebrated the birth of their first child. Welcome to the SGEM, Spencer.
It's truly great to be talking with you here, Ken. I'm excited to dive into some skeptical examinations of some data and help us become better emergency medicine physicians. While I'm proud to be attending this institution, I just want to make a disclaimer that my opinions expressed here are mine alone and do not represent my residency program, the hospitals I work at, or any other affiliated organizations.
All right, Spencer, thanks for the disclaimer. Let's dig into this because this is going to be a journal club that is on the COCA trial for OCAs, and we need to review the five rules of journal club. So can you go through the five rules of journal club with me?
Absolutely. So rule number one, you must talk or tweet about SGEM.
If people are watching this right now, please feel free to go on Twitter and start tweeting, and you can take screenshots of my slides. It's all free, open access. Please share this information widely so patients can get the best care based on the best evidence. What's the second rule of SGEM Journal Club?
Well, the next one is the evidence-based medicine answer is it all depends.
Yeah, that's right. It all depends. It takes place in a context. What's the third rule?
The third rule is don't panic. Even your faculty is not sure of some of the answers.
Yeah, it's hard to stay up on all the literature, and you can't be an expert at every single part. So don't panic. You know, if you don't know the answer, you're pretty sure that your faculty doesn't know some of the answers too. What's the fourth rule?
It's all about the methods.
Oh yeah, Jerry, if you're a Seinfeld fan.
That's gold, Jerry. Gold!
How about number five?
And finally, be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on SGEM.
Yeah, we want to encourage skepticism and critical thinking. All right, we like to start these things with a case. So what's the case that we're going to base this podcast on?
Well, so this is a case of an EMS crew arriving at the home of a 68-year-old suffering from a witnessed out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. They have a history of hypertension, elevated cholesterol, and smoked cigarettes for 50-plus years. Bystander CPR is being performed. The monitor is hooked up, and the paramedics are performing high-quality CPR and follow their ACLS protocol. Interosseous access is quickly obtained, and a dose of epinephrine is provided. CPR is continued while a supraglottic airway is placed successfully. The patient is then transported to the emergency department with vital signs absent.
Well, we like to give some background information about the topic, and certainly we have covered out-of-hospital cardiac arrests, or OCAs, multiple times on the SGEM. And this has included a number of issues, and we're going to run through some of those issues. The first one was basic life support versus advanced cardiac life support. This was the OPALS trial that was done by the legend of emergency medicine, Dr. Ian Steele. And this was a before and after study. It's a classic paper. And it showed that the addition of ACLS algorithm to BLS management did not increase survival to hospital discharge.
Yeah. And so, you know, we also have other evidence, you know, looking at out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. One of them is mechanical CPR and, you know, the man versus the machine question. You know, is an out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, is manual compression better or is mechanical compression better? And there is a trial done recently in the past couple of years that showed that no superiority with mechanical chest compression devices compared to manual chest compression for out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. So bottom line, mechanical chest compression devices do not appear superior to manual chest compression.
And another issue that's been in the literature really a lot lately is targeted temperature management. And TTM, the Targeted Temperature Management Protocol, came out of a couple of small trials done about 20 years ago. And those small trials got everybody excited about having a cooling center for someone who had a out-of-hospital cardiac arrest that didn't have return of consciousness. And so the Targeted Temperature Management trial came out, and then TTM-2 was just recently published, and it found no statistical difference between hypothermia and normothermia. So if you put the TTM-1 and TTM-2 trials together, it makes it clear that hypothermia does not result in better outcomes.
You know, we've always tried to figure out, you know, is there some way we can give medications to help people with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest? And so one of the issues we run into is that patient that you shock and doesn't seem to be working. They have a shock refractory ventricular fibrillation or refractory pulsus ventricular tachycardia. So another trial that was done looked at amiodarone versus lidocaine. And, you know, unfortunately, that didn't seem to show any difference in having a survival. So bottom line, neither lidocaine or amiodarone is likely to provide a clinically important benefit. It's a little disheartening with all these negative studies. It's hard to not be a little bit of a nihilist right now, right?
Yeah, I don't want people to be a nihilist about that. I mean, what you do matters, but sometimes what the interventions are don't really matter that much. We did do an SGEM episode on IO versus IV access. And the bottom line is high quality CPR and early defibrillation for shockable rhythms is much more important than obtaining vascular access.
Yeah, at least that's giving us a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel that, hey, we can do CPR and early shock. But, you know, the other question that comes up a lot with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest is the all-important Paramedic 2 trial, which looked at epinephrine for out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. And survival was statistically higher in the epinephrine group versus placebo. But the problem is if you look at neurological outcome, it looks like use of epinephrine to improve survival with favorable neurological outcome is not, you know, currently supported by that trial.
And the final thing that we've covered on the SGEM for out-of-hospital cardiac arrest was looking at supraglottic airways. And there was a couple of studies done looking at if supraglottics were non-inferior to endotracheal intubation. And the bottom line is, you know what's really important in out-of-hospital cardiac arrest? High-quality CPR and early defibrillation for those with shockable rhythms. And it's less important the type of airway you have. So let's focus on high-quality CPR and shocking those who can be shocked as opposed to worrying about how we got the airway.
You know, calcium's been something that's been on the minds, I think, of people that take care of patients in these situations. Because calcium has a theoretical benefit on patients in cardiac arrest as it has inotropic and vasopressor effects. The previous studies were kind of small, unfortunately, and it looked like there doesn't seem to be, you know, no superiority with calcium for ROSC. But it is interesting to look at those studies and show that the point estimate did favor calcium.
Yeah, there was no statistical difference, but that doesn't mean there was no clinical difference. And the point estimates did seem to favor calcium. So what's the clinical question we're going to try to answer on today's podcast?
Well, I think today we want to try to answer the question of, does administration of calcium during out-of-hospital cardiac arrest improve sustained return of spontaneous circulation?
And what's the reference for this?
Well, this is going to be a paper that's published in JAMA just recently. It's going to be Valentin and everyone else helping, looking at the effect of intravenous or interosseous calcium versus saline on return of spontaneous circulation in adults with an out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, a randomized controlled trial.
All right, let's run through the PICO, and we're going to add a T to the end of that. It's the PCOT. So what was the population that was included in this trial?
So the population here was adults 18 years of age or older with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest in the central Denmark region from January of 2020 to April of 2021. Who received at least one dose of epinephrine.
And they had a number of exclusions. One of the main ones was if it was a traumatic cardiac arrest, you were not included in the study. Another one, which is very common and unfortunate, is they excluded women who they knew were pregnant or strongly suspected could be pregnant. And so this study is silent on what to do with pregnant patients. And then patients who had received epinephrine outside of the trial or if there was a clinical indication to actually give calcium during the cardiac arrest. None of those patients were included in this trial. What was the intervention?
Well, they did calcium chloride, 5 millimoles, given either intravenously or intraosseously, immediately after the first dose of acetylcholinesterase epinephrine up to 2 doses.
And what did they compare it to?
Saline placebo, given the same method, IO or IV, again, after the first ACLS epinephrine dose, up to 2 doses.
All right, let's run through the outcomes. What was the primary outcome?
Well, they looked at sustained ROSC defined as no further need for chest compressions for at least 20 minutes.
And their secondary outcomes?
Well, yeah, outcomes plural. They had survival, favorable neurological outcome, and a quality of life assessment at 30 days and 90 days.
And I added that T to make it a PCOT. What type of trial was this?
So this was a, and bear with me, double-blind, placebo-controlled, parallel group, superiority, randomized control trial.
So the author's conclusions were, quote, among adults with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, treatment with intravenous or intraosseous calcium compared with saline did not significantly improve sustained return of spontaneous circulation. These results do not support the administration of calcium during out-of-hospital cardiac arrests in adults. All right, we have a quality checklist to go through for randomized control trials. There used to be 11 questions. That was my second favorite number. 5's my favorite number because I can count to it on one hand. And 11 is my second favorite number because of the movie This Is Spinal Tap. But I added a 12th question about financial conflicts of interest to this quality checklist. So let's go through those checklist questions, Spencer. The first question, are these emergency department patients?
No, this is a pre-hospital trial.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean these patients won't end up in the emergency department. I think most of them will, but this was done in the pre-hospital setting. Question number 2, did they adequately randomize the patients?
Yep, it appears so. The patients were randomized in a 1-to-1 ratio, either calcium versus saline, and they did a block sizes of 2, 4, or 6. That can be seen in figure 1 of the original paper. The randomization was generated using a random number generator and then stratified according to the mobile emergency care unit stations.
And did they conceal the randomization?
Yes, it was concealed.
And did they do an intention to treat analysis?
Yes, patients were analyzed according to the randomized assignment.
And were the patients recruited consecutively?
Yes, we think so. It wasn't explicitly stated. What they do say is that, quote, almost all patients with return of spontaneous circulation or ongoing cardiopulmonary resuscitation during transfer are transported to a single university hospital capable of cardiac cath, PCI, ECMO, and care after cardiac arrest, including TTM.
All right, the 6th question. Were both groups similar with respect to prognostic factors?
Yes.
And how was the blinding? Was everyone unaware of group allocation?
Yeah, it looks like so.
Did everyone get treated the same except for the intervention of calcium?
Yeah, it appears so. They indicated they were using ACLS.
And was the follow-up complete, or did they have a lot of patients lost to follow-up?
Actually, there were no patients lost to follow-up.
And were all patient-important outcomes considered?
Yep.
Do you think the treatment effect was large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
No, I don't think so.
All right, and the 12th question, this is about financial conflicts of interest.
Well, I mean, Dr. Granfeld is one of the authors, and they reported being a member of the Data and Safety Monitoring Board and received personal fees from Norc Biopharmaceuticals and has a patent from Senapoc. No other disclosures were reported in this paper.
All right, Spencer, let's get to the results section. There were over 1,200 out-of-hospital cardiac arrests during this period. They excluded 824 for a variety of reasons, but the most common reason, and it was more than two-thirds, it was 69% of patients, were excluded because they didn't get any epinephrine. The mean age in this study was 68 years. 71% were male, more than 80% arrested at home, and look at this number, 85% received bystander CPR, and half of the patients were found to be in asystole. All right, Spencer, what was the key result?
Well, so overall, there was no statistical difference in return of spontaneous circulation between the two groups.
Yeah, so there was a difference with ROSC, but it wasn't statistically different. What were the actual numbers?
Well, so for the primary outcome, 19% had ROSC in the calcium group and 27% in the saline group.
So the point estimate was actually better if you were getting the placebo, but it wasn't statistically different. How about secondary outcomes?
So there's no statistical difference between 30-day survival, 30-day survival with favorable neurological outcome, or 90-day survival.
Now, when they looked at one of the secondary outcomes, survival at 90 days with favorable neurologic outcome was statistically better, but it was in the placebo group.
Yeah, and it should be noted that quality of life assessment assessed by the patient was not statistically different in 30 days, but was at 90 days in this side, this time favoring calcium.
Oh, it's time to get to my favorite part, and that's where we get to talk nerdy. You ready to talk nerdy with me, Spencer?
Absolutely.
I love talking nerdy. Okay, so I usually pick out five things I want to highlight from each study. And so I'm going to go first with the first nerdy point. And this is about outcomes. And this is more of a rant, I think. I mean, it would be great if there was some consistency in reporting outcomes in studies. This trial was registered with clinicaltrials.gov. And as a nerd, I went and looked at clinicaltrials.gov and said, how did they register this trial and what did they consider their outcomes? Now, the primary outcome was the same in the registration and in the protocol and in the published manuscript. However, there was no mention of a quality of life assessment registered as an outcome. It was called a tertiary outcome in their published protocol and then categorized as a secondary outcome on table 2 of the manuscript and then called a tertiary outcome in the text of the manuscript. Oh, the same thing for the 90-day outcome, which was not mentioned in the trial registry, was considered a tertiary outcome in the protocol, but elevated to a secondary outcome in table 2 and then a tertiary outcome into the body of the text. And if you're confused, so am I. I would like some consistency, please.
That's totally fair. So one of the second points I like to talk about, you know, this nerdy aspect of this paper is looking at the external validity. And so this trial was conducted in Denmark, and they have a two-tiered EMS service that has an ambulance and a mobile care unit that actually has a physician on that. This is different from most places in North America that do not have physicians in the pre-hospital setting. In addition, you know, the latest statistics from the American Heart Association on cardiac arrests in the USA are different than the cohort included in this trial. The biggest difference was that bystander CPR was, you know, 39% in the United States on average and 85% in this Danish trial. These are some huge differences, and there are some other differences that could limit the external validity to your own community.
Yeah, it's really important to look at what kind of patients were in this trial and compared to what your community sees. And, you know, the external validity comes up often, and so you wonder how applicable it is to your patient population. The third nerdy point we wanted to talk about was the dose of calcium itself. It is possible, but not likely, that a different dose of calcium may have made a difference or may not have made a difference. Now, proving a negative is harder than proving a positive. And in science, we start with a null hypothesis of no superiority. And in this case, the null hypothesis would be that calcium is not superior to placebo. The results did not support the alternative hypothesis of superiority in this trial. So we should accept the null hypothesis. It would be a completely separate claim to say calcium does not work for out-of-hospital cardiac arrests, or OCAs, If we made that claim, we would have to provide evidence to support that claim. The more accurate and intellectually honest interpretation of this study is that there is no high-quality evidence to support the routine use of calcium in OCAs.
Yeah, and I think also looking at this, you know, this is a study done in an out-of-hospital setting, right? So OCAs. This data directly applies to OCAs and not necessarily the setting that a lot of your listeners work in, which is an in-hospital cardiac arrest. There are longer times to drug administration in the pre-hospital setting. Time to drug administration was a median of 17 minutes. It could be hypothesized that early time to treatment could provide a patient-oriented outcome of benefit. However, that would need to be demonstrated.
Yeah, it would need to be demonstrated with evidence. And the time to accept a claim is when there's sufficient evidence to accept the claim. Now, the fifth and final nerdy point we wanted to talk about was stopping early. This trial was stopped early, and we've discussed this problem of stopping trials early before on the SGEM. Stopping early can introduce bias and increase uncertainty of the results. Stopping trials early overestimates the effect size if there is a regression to the mean. And also, including trials that are stopped early can introduce bias into systematic reviews and meta-analyses, making them more difficult to interpret. Well, Spencer, those are the five nerdy points I wanted to get to. Now it's time to comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
Well, I mean, ultimately, we agree with the author's conclusions, I think.
Well, can you give us an SGEM bottom line?
So the routine use of calcium in out-of-hospital cardiac arrest is not currently supported by the available evidence.
All right, well, how about giving a case resolution to the one you presented at the beginning of this podcast?
Well, as happens more frequently than not, more frequently than we would like, three rounds of epinephrine were eventually provided without ever achieving ROSC for our patient. The ECG shows no cardiac electrical activity, the pupils are fixed and dilated, and the POCA shows no cardiac activity. Unfortunately, the patient is pronounced deceased in the emergency department.
So how are you going to take this new study on calcium, this randomized control trial, and apply it clinically in your practice?
Well, we have not, and we will continue to not routinely give calcium to adult patients with out-of-hospital cardiac arrests.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you can't give calcium, and it doesn't mean in your clinical judgment in certain cases calcium shouldn't be given. But we don't have evidence strong enough to say we should be routinely and protocolizing giving calcium to adult patients with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. Now, what are you going to tell the patient? And I guess in this case, you're going to be talking to the family. This is a really important thing.
Well, you tell the patient's family that the patient's had a cardiac arrest. The paramedics did great CPR. They put in an airway to help breathing, gave epinephrine to try to restart the heart. And everyone did as much as they could, but despite everyone's efforts, they were not able to get their heart going again, and that the patient has died. I think this is something that, as a resident, I think we get to practice a little bit of the art of medicine and get that opportunity to talk with patients and be clear when we talk with them about what has happened and what efforts have been done.
Yeah, I think it's a real privilege and an honor to be in the room with a family when they're going through this process. It's something that I've really appreciated over my career of having a window into that experience and being a supportive individual. And like I said, it's an honor to be there. All right. Well, it's time to announce the Keener contest question winner. Every podcast has a trivia question at the end, and I challenge the audience to answer that question. And the first person to answer that question gets a cool skeptical prize. So somebody in chat may be able to win this prize today. So last week's winner was Josh Magoo. He is a third-year medical student from Stony Brook University. He knew that Dr. Pam Benson was the first female EM resident in North America back in 1971. Spencer, what question did you come up for this podcast?
Well, this question will be, is Approximately how many kilograms of calcium is in an adult?
Oh, you made it hard for the audience. Okay, let me explain. Kilograms is a measurement used in the metric system. So if you're not familiar with that system, I will accept an imperial answer in pounds. I should stop beating up Americans about the metric system. There are other FOMED resources on this, and I will put links in the show notes. But Spencer, I want to thank you for coming on the show and being a great guest skeptic.
Thank you so very much. I appreciate the time to talk with you and for your listeners out there. Thank you very much for listening to the Skeptics Guide.
Yeah, and your last task is to read the SGM tagline.
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptics Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.